Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, AA meeting on air. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic. We'll start our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
The preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any set, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting. This morning we have members of the fellowship in sharing their experience, strength and hope about the journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off this morning, Vic, do you want to share?
Thanks, Steve. My name's Vic and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vic.
Good morning. It's been a difficult journey for me. I started drinking when I was 14 years old, and that to me was suddenly the greatest thing since sliced bread, alcohol. It suddenly was what I realized was my new higher power. It turned me into Superman. It gave me courage to go up and talk to people and so on and so forth. Up until that time, I had I'd always sought attention, and I had never really been able to be accepted socially by my friends or peers or students, because my dad was in the service, and we went to different towns about every two or three years. So I never really was able to be quite accepted into any group when I was growing up. At any rate, I did have a sense of humor, and I could make people laugh. So that was my little wedge into social acceptance. And, of course, I thought I was a lot funnier, and they thought I was a lot funnier when I drank, too. So I became the class clown, the school comedian. But at the same time, I also became the school alcoholic. I loved alcohol. I just had to have it as any chance I could get. I got a job working at a liquor store, and that was the beginning of a 42-year love affair with ethyl alcohol. And it had its ups and downs. I thought I was a pretty smart fellow and could control things. I could pull my act together when the chips were down and pass exams to get into university and, you know, do all the right things at the right time, get a job, find a nice lovely lady, marry, settle down, get some kids, all that kind of stuff. But alcohol was always with me in a moderately controlled circumstance. It seemed like my philosophy was you pay your money and you take your chances. If I got stopped for drunk driving once every 10 years or something like that, well, that would be all right. If I made some bad decisions about things regarding finance and stuff like that because I happened to be drunk when I impulsively decided to cancel that loan or buy this car or whatever it happened to be, well, that would be all right. I could always cover it. It seemed like there was plenty of reserves of good sense and so on and so forth left inside of me. But in the end, my family situation deteriorated to the point where my wife said, you're going to have to choose between ethyl alcohol and me. And of course, I chose the alcohol, and she left, and my world blew apart. But that's okay. I could put another world together. And I managed to do that twice. But in the process, I consumed an inordinate amount of alcohol, and my judgment was getting worse and worse. My sense of moral values was deteriorating as well. I was moving the goalpost further and further away from what people would consider to be normal. I woke up one morning, and the car wasn't in the driveway, but the keys were on the table. And I thought to myself, someone's stolen my car. I called the cops, and I said, my car's been stolen, license plate such and such. And they said, where were you last night? I said, I was at the Lincoln and drink green drinking. And they said, well, have you checked the parking lot down there? No. So I went down. Of course, the car was there in the lot. I'd gone home with someone else and forgotten that I'd even driven down there. It all had happened in a blackout. I never told the cops that I found the car. And 2 weeks later, I was arrested on the motorway for stealing my own car because it happened to go by a patrol and they had the license number. That was it. Now, that is not normal behavior. It's just not on. Things like that happened all the time, and it was getting worse and worse. In the end, what finally did me in was my body. It packed up. I wound up in the hospital twice. The first time, the doctor said, we suggest you ease up on the alcohol, Vic. And the second time, which was about a year later, they said, if you keep drinking, you're going to die, Vic. And I didn't really quite know what to do, but I did know that AA was something that had helped other people. And I went into the program and suddenly discovered, much to my amazement, that it wasn't a program that was about stopping drinking. It was a program that, of course, that had to happen in order to save my life. But it was a program to change my thinking because my priorities were totally back to front. My ego was so big. I was completely wrapped up in myself. And, of course, being tightly wrapped up in myself, I made a pretty small package. I learned to listen because these people had been through stuff that was much crazier sometimes than the stuff I'd been through. And yet they were alcoholics as much as I were. They spoke my language. They understood where I had come from. I knew where they'd come from. And it was like I had met all the people that I had always felt I never belonged to any group. That was the group I belonged to. Suddenly I realized I was home and I listened. They said, Vic, if you want what we have, do what we do. And they talked about this program, a 12-step program to sort of take apart my life and put the good components back into it and discard the ones which weren't really very useful and no one much cared for, components that I had picked up along the way as my judgment had deteriorated. Now I've been in the program for a while, and it's working out pretty well for me. I never got back a lot of the stuff that I lost, the wives, the houses, some of the jobs, and this, that, and the other. But I got new stuff, stuff I never expected that I would get. And the biggest thing that I got back was self-esteem. Suddenly, I didn't hate myself anymore. I was thinking about other people. These people in AA had saved my life. Now, how can I show gratitude for that? Well, they said one of the biggest things that you can do is do what we do. We spread the message to other alcoholics that were suffering like us. And I found that I didn't need to drink anymore because I had something that made me feel okay, that I was helping other people. And that just had not been on my radar for most of my life. So basically, I love AA as much as I used to love alcohol. Alcohol had been my higher power. Now this program of recovery and bringing people back to life from near death is my new higher power. I can't speak highly enough for AA. And it's one of the most amazing programs that I have ever heard of. And the thing is, you know, it's free. It's free for anybody who really wants to get into recovery. People spend thousands of dollars to go to clinics, psychiatrists, psychologists. They read self-help books. They do all kinds of strange stuff. And you know, this program is here right in front of us. There's 100 meetings in Auckland alone. I don't think I could have got into recovery if I hadn't lived in Auckland. The opportunity here is fantastic. If you want to find out more about it, you can call our service center in town. Don't know what the number is, but it's on the internet, and just go to one or two meetings and see if you can identify with the people like I did in the first few meetings I went to. I'm really grateful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, folks. I can assure you, you would have heard us laughing a little bit in the background, and we were laughing with Vic and not Adam. What a great story. You're on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air, and we have members of the fellowship on this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And to continue on with the sharing, Linda, do you want to share?
Sure. Hi, my name's Linda. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Linda.
I think the thing that most struck me when I was growing up was the fact that I was a little bit different to other people. However, I never really categorized it. I never really put it into one bucket to what sort of a personality I had. But what I realized as I got older is that I had quite a large ego, and that required me to perform perhaps in a way scoping beyond my actual capacity. If ever I was in a social situation at school or in a learning situation at school, if I didn't have the answer, I'd try and make up the answer because I sort of felt that I had to be good at absolutely everything I did. As life goes on and you continue with this attitude, you start to get disappointed, and you start, I guess, other people start to get disappointed in you. And so I guess you know where this is leading. What happened to me as life went on was that, you know, I lost a lot of self-respect. And I guess because of the fact that I had not performed to the extent that I had put myself in, you know, in that position that I felt I should be performing, I started to feel that I was letting myself down, letting my family down, letting my friends down. So what do? You know, it wasn't that earlier age that I discovered alcohol, but when I did discover alcohol, I found that I lost that feeling of inadequacy. I found that I lost that feeling of disappointment and things that I said and did. I felt that I could make excuses for why I didn't go as well as I thought I should have, you know, and I became very reliant on that friend, alcohol. I didn't even realize that I was doing it either. That's the amazing thing. I just continued to operate on a daily basis. I went overseas, as all young ones do, I guess, and I did my big OE, and you know, I did all the things that everyone else does as they're growing up. But I seemed to have to drink all the time, and I guess because of age and things, it wasn't so noticeable that I was necessarily drinking excessively or more than anybody else. There is a culture, I do believe, in New Zealand, which, you know, does encourage people to drink. I hate what I see on television and hear on the news and so on about, you know, about alcohol-related injuries and all sorts of situations. I think in New Zealand we do have this kind of a, you know, we do have this kind of an issue, and I certainly got caught up in it myself. What I found was, of course, that as I got in, you know, into my early 20s and so on, I would naturally associate with people who had similar ideas to me, that the idea of going out and having fun is definitely included having a drink or two or three. And I never knew the stop button. A lot of my friends seemed to be able to push the stop button and go on, you know, and just relax and not continue on drinking. And then my life continued on. I got married. I had children. And, you know, I guess there's a saying around the rooms that I was a functioning alcoholic. I never put it down to the fact that I was an alcoholic, that I was drinking pretty much on a daily basis. Like Vic has said, you know, I think you start to notice it in your health. You start to notice it in various signs. But my head said to me, oh, Linda, don't be stupid. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. Don't be ridiculous. You're fine. I'd go to bed sometimes at night and wake up the next morning and think, oh, did I take my makeup off last night? You know, just silly little things. But I could discard them. I could discount them. They weren't big issues. Anyhow, eventually, I suppose, things started to really happen for me. I could see that people were even perhaps not inviting me the places that I would normally get invited to, and I started to question, was it something to do with my behaviour? Interesting, you know, people are very polite and they don't say, Linda, we're not going to invite you somewhere because, you know, you drink too much. I didn't realise that people had that impression of me at all. But here we go, life goes on, and I stayed married, and I must say my relationship was one of, I think it could be expressed as codependence. I don't think my husband drank much less than I did, but you know, that was his problem, wasn't it? It wasn't my problem. And I think we'd sort of look at each other and think that the other one drank more than the other. So, you know, he had the problem, I didn't. As time went on, I got very unhappy because I started to recognize that, you know, I was becoming reliant on alcohol and I did not know how to get out of that situation. I did not know. And I would wake up pretty much every morning now thinking that I was a disappointment. I was a disappointment to my children. I was a disappointment to my family. You know, all these things that I started thinking about all those years ago that made me start drinking were now making me consider, wow, maybe alcohol isn't the right thing for me. But by this stage, I had become very reliant on alcohol to see me through pretty much every day. And I was frightened. I was very, very frightened. What happened to me was, to cut a long story short, I just decided that I'd let so many people down over such a length of time that I had become a useless mother, I'd become a useless wife, I'd become a useless daughter, a useless sister, you know, and I tried to take my own life. I was lucky. I was very, very lucky. But when I was in hospital recovering, something happened to me, and I cannot describe exactly what it was, but I promised myself right then and there that if I got out of this completely well and happy and with all my facilities, I was going to do something about it. And do you know what? That just gave me so much strength. It gave me so much power. I cannot describe the sense of relief that I had that I'd made that decision. I left, went and started recovery, you know, and that's really what I did. I found AA. I went to a rehabilitation program because it was recommended that I did. I found recovery through AA. I found recovery in the people of AA. I found recovery in friendship in AA. And I found a solution in AA. We talk about a 12-step program in AA, and it is fundamentally, in the very first instance, admitting to yourself that you have a problem with alcohol and that alcohol has basically taken control of your life. And I was honestly able to say that very, very openly. And from that point on, I just approached it. I got the, you know, I did everything that was suggested. I found a sponsor. I went to meetings. I started doing service. I consider what I'm doing today some service, because if only one person out there today is listening to my story and just gets a little inkling of, wow, that sounds a bit like me, you know, then I feel that I've actually done a little bit of service, and I'm really happy about that. There's so many things that you can do in AA. it's not that person in a plastic raincoat with a paper bag and a bottle who's an alcoholic. It's a lot of people in everyday life who are alcoholics, and it's not a shameful thing. In fact, for me, as ridiculous as it sounds, I'm actually grateful to be an alcoholic, because by discovering that I actually have a problem, I have been able to do something about it. And that, for me, has been, it's turned my life around. It's absolutely turned my life around. I would just recommend that anybody who even thinks remotely that they might have a problem with alcohol, just come to a meeting. Just sit in the back of the room, listen, you don't need to say anything, and just see if you can identify, you know, and someone will come up to you at some stage and just be very friendly. Don't be afraid, don't be ashamed, because we're all there for exactly the same reason. No one judges you. During my recovery, I did relapse a couple of times, and each time I went back to AA, I was welcomed with open arms, and I was congratulated for coming back. There is no shame in this. And that's the thing I think that I've found so happy about this is the willingness. If you've got the willingness to carry on in your recovery, no matter what little hiccups you have on the way, then that gives you, that's the foundation of your recovery, and it just gets better and better. My life today is wonderful. I could not be happier, and I just wish and pray that all of you, and any of you who are listening to this, have got something out of it, then you've made my day. Thank you very much for listening.
Excellent. Thanks, Linda. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM, and we had members of the fellowship on this morning sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. Our last speaker this morning is Chris. Do you want to share?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Yeah. My name's Chris, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here this morning and to hear Vic and Linda, and I identified with what they were saying, and I'm in the right place, and I love AA. I love AA and what it's done. I kind of believe that I'm one of these alcoholics that. Yeah, I kind of feel like I was an alcoholic before I even picked up a drink, and even when I was a kid, I don't know, it was just this weird thing. Even when I was a kid, long before I picked up a drink, I kind of had that feeling that I wanted to be somewhere else. I wasn't content in my own skin or who I was, and I always wanted to change how I felt. I looked at my older brothers who were teenagers, and I used to kind of look at them, and I was like, I couldn't wait to be a teenager and all this, and just be somewhere else. And that was just something that stayed with me right through my drinking when I eventually did pick up. And yeah, so I just had all these things, like, even before picking up, and I couldn't wait to get into it and to be older. And I finally did pick up. I picked up young, around 12 or 13. I had my first sort of proper drinking experience where I got drunk and of course got very sick and all this, but couldn't wait to do it again, of course, at the next available opportunity. And it changed the way I felt. It changed my perception on the world and of the people around me, and it changed how I felt about myself too, and that was sort of a fundamental thing that really drove me to carry on drinking and also other substances as well along the way. And my drinking story is like a whirlwind. It was 10 to 12 years certainly 10 years of alcoholic drinking from the ages of 15 to 25, which is when I got sober. And it was just a whirlwind, you know. It progressed incredibly fast, and I started bottoming out incredibly fast and at a young age. I think other substances like accelerated it all as well. And just couldn't get enough alcohol. It was just crazy. To the point where I didn't know how to live in the real world, and my life just really ended up being this small bubble where I knew a small amount of people, and just really struggled with normal life stuff. I couldn't work properly and all of this, and I always did have a roof over my head and all that, and I always. I always did kind of have a job and stuff like that, but I couldn't do all that stuff properly. And fundamentally, I had a living sober problem. And it sort of ended up being that, living drunk was kind of my default setting, and living sober was something that was completely foreign to me, and doing normal life. I got to my sort of late teens and early 20s, and it was, I knew I was having major problems by then, because a lot of the people that I had grown up with and went to school with and all the rest of it, they were starting to sort their lives out and, do things like getting married, and they were getting careers and some of them were bought a house and all that sort of stuff, and you know, nothing was changing for little old Chris, you know. So I started to kind of get a little bit of cop on about myself and you know, the problems that I was having, and you know, I knew I was, and I think even then, before I'd even attended an AA meeting, you know, I knew I was an alcoholic. That was pretty obvious to me and to other people around me. I started trying things I didn't know about AA at that point. You know, I started trying other things to sort my life out. And what I used to try was to change my sort of outside circumstances and things in my life. You know, I used to sort of think that if I could get my things sorted out in my outside world, then I would be all right on the inside, you know, and then I probably wouldn't have to drink the way I drank, or, you know, I'd be able to drink like a normal person and all that sort of stuff. But no matter what I did, nothing would really change. And I did things like, you know, I did a lot of what we call in AA geographicals, you know, where we moved to a different place for a fresh start. You know, I did that quite a few times, and I ended up in Western Australia for a while and living over there for a couple of years, and you know, things got better for a little while, but then they got worse again, and then I'd come back to Auckland where my family was, and you know, things, you know, I'm trying to be, you know, I'd be detoxing again back at the parents' house and all this, and trying to sort it out, fresh start again, and things would be all right for a few months, and then I'd be back into it again, and the same old story, you know. Then I ended up on the other side of the world, in Ireland, and this is where I ended up getting sober. So I was around 25 by that stage in 2007, and yeah, just same thing again. Got there, things were all right for a little while, but then things got worse and worse again. And yeah, it was just the same old story. Nothing was changing. And yeah, I could see then that no matter what I did, you know, and all the counselling and all the stuff and the books I'd read along the way, and nothing, you know, all that stuff, nothing had worked. And I knew then that, yeah, I was sort of a hopeless case. And it was at that point that I was directed to my first AA meeting in Ireland, in the west of Ireland. And that's where I got sober. And, you know, I went to my first AA meeting thinking that I was too young, thinking that I hadn't drank enough. Thinking that I wasn't bad enough and all this. But it was just amazing. The first meeting that I went to, I got identification, you know, and identification is very important, you know, and for anyone that's listening today that's identifying with what you've heard, myself or the other speakers share, yeah, identification is really important. And so when I went to my first meeting, I identified with what people said about their drinking and how they felt, and the things they did when they're drinking, how they felt when they were drinking, how they felt when they were not drinking, their sort of behaviour stuff and all that. And I identified, and I kept coming back to the next meeting, and I heard more and more along the way. Fast forward to today, I stayed in AA. I've never left. I really immersed myself in it. And I found a way to live sober, and that's the fundamental sort of promise of AA, is that if we do the program to the best of our ability, we do it the way it is in our Alcoholics Anonymous big book, then we do get a life of living sober, and how to live life sober in any and all conditions, you know. And even this year, early this year, my mum passed away. And, you know, it was a hard 3 or 4 months, and, you know, there was hospitals and hospices and supporting my family and organising the funeral and stuff afterwards. And you know, these are things that happen in life. And, you know, if I was still drinking, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do any of that stuff. And also, even if I had been not drinking without AA, I would have definitely picked up, you know. So I'm really grateful to have what I have today, to have the opportunity to come here today. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and you've identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can call 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in the local area. So we'll be back again next Sunday at 10:45 with AA meeting on air, and we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.